Hello and welcome to Unofficial Partner, the Sports Business Podcast. I'm Richard Gillis. Today's the first in a series of conversations with senior decision makers on the brand side of the sponsorship market across a number of different categories. Today's guest is Ben Carter from the food delivery firm Just Eat, part of Takeaway.com. Ben's current role is Global Director of Restaurants and Strategic Partnerships, and our conversation takes in how sport and sponsorship applies to what is an extremely dynamic market category for many sports rights holders. We start by asking Ben, what does the company do? How does it make money? And the preconceptions people bring to the Just Eat brand, and then the role that sport and sponsorship plays in the company's marketing strategy now and into the future. Just Eat has a history of broadcast sponsorships around English football, including BT's Sports Premier League and UEFA Champions League coverage, and the firm's owned by Takeaway.com, which is the new official food delivery platform partner for UEFA Euro 2020, now 2021, a spot which replaced McDonald's official restaurant designation. Here is Ben Carter. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And my first question really is, I know Just Eat, obviously everyone knows Just Eat, or they think they do, and I just want to start off, before we get into the sort of sports sponsorship discussion, I just want you to take us inside the business in terms of how it works, just on a, you know, and again, you can treat me like an idiot because I've got a lot of preconceptions about the category, and it's a very interesting category from be a lot of rights holders listening, and there'll be, it's a big spending sort of category at the moment in sponsorship. But just take us inside for a minute. How does the business make money?
Sure. So Just Eat is now 15 years old in the UK, and Just Eat was originally set up in Denmark and then came over to the UK. And very quickly became the market leader in food delivery in the UK. Just Eat itself is part of a bigger group called Just Eat Takeaway, which is a global FTSE 50 business operating in 23 markets. And what Just Eat does really is connect customers to restaurants. Just Eat will either do the deliveries themselves on behalf of restaurants, or the restaurants will do the deliveries. And in terms of how we make money, we are a marketplace business. So we will charge restaurants a commission on orders that customers place through our platform to the restaurant. And as you can imagine, certainly in more recent times, food delivery has been absolutely booming, and Just Eat has traded very resiliently through these really difficult times because people have had two options when they're locked down at home, to either cook or to order food in. And we've certainly seen a lot of growth, particularly around new occasions such as breakfast and lunch, as well as obviously strong growth around our core occasions of dinner on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
So getting the difference between a sort of good year and a bad year is signing up more restaurants?
So the secret to the business model is a classic marketplace business. So like any sector, to have mass awareness, so as many people in the country aware of Just Eat. Hence, you probably have seen the very high profile advertising campaign featuring Snoop Dogg that is being run at the moment. But then also, as you said, Richard, to have as many restaurants on the platform as possible. And in the UK, we've got over 45,000 restaurants. That spans from sort of your favorite independent fish and chip shop, Indian kebab shop, Chinese, right through to high street and very, very well-known brands such as McDonald's, KFC, Greggs or Pret a Manger, to name but a few. And so the business model is all about having the right supply mix and the right number of customers and connecting those customers with the restaurants.
And so from McDonald's or Pret's perspective, the upside for them, what's the advantage for them? I can sort of guessing it, but what can it, is it quantifiable?
Yeah, the advantage is that they tap into a new group of customers. So obviously, there's been a very big debate, really ongoing, about if you are a massive food restaurant brand in your own right, why don't you have your own sort of food delivery app and all of that? Obviously, it's quite a complex business to run food delivery and logistics. And obviously, restaurants are amazing at cooking the food, but what we say is let us do the delivery. But actually, even if you were sort of the world's biggest restaurant brand, the likelihood of every sort of food customer who wants food delivery in the UK downloading your app is quite slim. So like any marketplace business, we enable those restaurants to tap into a very, very big pool of customers. In the UK, we've got over 13 million active customers who have ordered from us at least once a year. And that's a big pool of incremental customers that those restaurants can tap into.
So the sort of echoes of the broader thing in sport, you know, we're talking about digital transformation. I always think that food companies and delivery companies are underrated in this conversation because actually they are doing it. They've transformed their business digitally. And that's what we're seeing. You're sort of reaping the rewards of that work, I guess, that took place over the last decade.
Yeah, I think so. I've been at Just Eat for nearly 5 years. And when I came in, it was very much around channel shift. It was about disrupting a very traditional market where typically a customer would have called up their local takeaway or walked into their local takeaway to order their food. What we then saw was sort of the rise of the big restaurant brands coming online and that disruption continuing. And now actually sort of with over half the population and ordering food online, it's less about channel shift and it's about awareness. And it's about we've done the hard yards in terms of the digital transformation, but it's just about making the consumer aware of the breadth of supply that is available in their area. Ultimately, we are a global and a national brand, but when you type in your postcode to our app, you want to be able to find the restaurants, your favorite restaurants. So we are actually a really hyper-local business, and our marketing is all around building that mental availability in terms of building that mass awareness, but also then making sure we have the supply to match on a very local level.
Okay, so we'll come back to mental availability in a minute, but what does it own? What because this is the bit that, you know, again, traditional businesses, we know what they are and what they own, but what does Just Eat own?
So Just Eat obviously has a lot of employees who are making all of this happen. In most of our markets, including the UK, we work with third-party delivery partners to enable those deliveries, though Just Eat Takeaway, which, as I said, is our parent group, have gone on record and said that they are launching an employee-powered delivery model in the UK, which they've already launched in other European markets called Scuba in the coming months. So in terms of what we own, we're a bit like Airbnb. We don't own hotels or we don't own rooms in people's houses, but we power that availability and we power that choice. So we don't own restaurants. We have no desire to be a restaurant. We think restaurants are amazing at making food. And what we want to do is to connect customers to those restaurants. So like any marketplace business, our power is in our brand and our scalable tech platform. And it really is about that scalability that is so important, because on a peak Saturday night, we would do over 2,000 orders a minute in the UK. So you really need to make sure you've got that scale from a tech perspective as well.
So let's transpose this into sport and sport sponsorship then. Let's, before we talk about the category, because I want to talk about that more broadly, but take me through the sort of portfolio. How do you view sport? What is its role? What's the point of it from your perspective?
I think sport is incredibly powerful. We've talked about the awareness and the mental availability. So as an awareness platform, it's got huge potential. You will have seen us over the last few years be involved in sport, whether it's through broadcast sponsorship, whether it's through event sponsorship in the UK. When I first started, we actually sponsored Derby County, and we came very close to Derby getting to the Premier League twice, in fact, in the 3 years that we were their sponsor.
Is that the Lampard period?
No, it's before Lampard. No, it was, now you've put me on the spot. Steve McLaren was one of the managers. The first year of the sponsorship, although I wasn't there, was the year that Bobby Zamora broke Derby fans' hearts in the 89th minute at Wembley in the playoff final. I think we've gone on a journey of, as I said, that was a very tactical commercial opportunity where the business prior to me joining liked the setup at Derby and believed Derby had everything, all the ingredients to become a Premier League club. So a business decision was made that actually it would be a great exposure for the brand. We've then gone on, and as I said, we've sort of broadened out beyond sort of clubs and got much more involved on sort of the broadcast and the platform level. We have done a tactical sponsorship and have had a tactical sponsorship now for the last 4 years with the PDC. And the reason for that is it's a great platform pre-COVID to really activate on the ground. If you think of darts fans and sort of darts fans sitting there watching dart, mm-hmm. to be able to sort of give them to activate through vouchering and through brand awareness and content. And I think where sport is really exciting is in terms of the awareness platform, the audience platform, but also the ability to sort of bring that content to life. And I think what's really important for us as a brand, and I'm no longer responsible for our sort of sports sponsorship portfolio, but we will always look at access that we can get and how we really bring those rights, how we can activate those rights and really tap into that content. Because ultimately, as a brand, we're not a brand that takes ourselves too seriously. We're a brand that wants to entertain the nation. Our brand proposition revolves around joy. Clearly, there are a lot of synergies between joy and sport.
And so looking at that then, the sort of selection process is always one that people are very interested in, obviously, and they're on the sales side. But what do you do? Because you've got if we come up to speed, I'm looking at you've got a BT broadcast deal around Premier League and Champions League, is that right? And then I follow the Football League sort of digital platform. How do you, and what am I missing out here?
Yeah, I mean, so I sit on the global side of the business now, so I can't speak specifically for the UK and my counterpart, Matt Bushby, the UK marketing director. But yeah, the BT deal certainly there. I think the EFL deal was last season. I'm not sure whether there is that deal in place this year. The PDC would be another partnership that the Just Eat UK has as well. But I think, look, when I was marketing director and now with Matt as marketing director and now in my more global role, we get approaches all the time and we get approaches from clubs. We get approaches from sort of associations, from leagues, from rights holders, from new sports. And I think it always comes down to audience fit. It comes down to brand fit. It obviously comes down to, as I said, sort of activation opportunity and how that also aligns with sort of marketing activity we've got running at the time. But also, obviously, it comes down to relevance and access. And as I said, Just Eat is in the business of building its brand and driving that awareness very, very hard. But ultimately, that awareness has to convert. And what's been fantastic for a digital business like Just Eat is that traditional brand building platforms like TV and radio still perform incredibly well for the business. So you are not going to see the business suddenly switch all of its TV budget into sport. But what sport does is give us another platform and another set of rights and another content stream for us to activate our brand in a different way.
So I'm imagining there's a sort of Saturday night competition going on, or, you know, that let's just go inside that for a minute, because obviously you've got the big entertainment properties in the UK. You know, you've got the sort of Britain's got, you know, the talent shows, all of the big TV programs, and then you've got sort of sports events as well.
Yeah.
But is it as simple as saying, okay, you need to be front of mind while people and big audiences are watching at that moment, and you want do they sort of move straight into, okay, we're going to order a takeaway via this? Is it as simple as that? It doesn't sound like it's as simple as that, but just data feedback that you get?
There is some science involved. Let me, if you don't mind, just indulge me for a few minutes while I go back a few years to when I did the X Factor deal. So you just talked about the sort of battle for Saturday night. The battle for Saturday night is so crucial. And that's why 4 years ago, we decided to sponsor the X Factor. At the time, the X Factor was getting sort of 10, 11 million people watching it on a Saturday night. Again, had a really sort of rich set of content that we could activate and tap into. And clearly, the sort of synergies and alignment between sort of takeaway and sort of the family and friends gathering together to watch that big TV moment was so very obvious. However, when we started to do the sort of the initial sort of analysis of whether to do this partnership or not, what we found was there was a massive crossover between our existing customer base and the X Factor audience. And what we didn't want to do was, frankly, just be paying to drive orders that we would have got anyway. So it isn't just about the awareness and the battle of Saturday night. It's about how do we tap into incremental customers and also how do we tap into incremental occasions. And I think taking that back to football, what I think is so interesting about football, and I'll talk about a few years ago, for example, when Domino's took over the halftime breaks on Sky, and before the game started at sort of 58 minutes past, and then they would do a call to action to order your pizza, and they would remind you again at halftime. And I think that was really clever because it's about tapping into the right occasion, and it's about tapping into an incremental occasion. So I think what sport, yes, absolutely, it is a battle for eyeballs, but it's so much more than that. It's about a battle for incremental eyeballs and the right eyeballs. And I think, again, with sport, it's very tempting to get seduced by the audiences, but it has to come down to the ability to activate those audiences and the value in those audiences.
So compare then a sort of big ticket, an X Factor decision with a sort of club or a league deal. They're different animals, obviously, but what's the thinking? How does it work on a club or league level?
Yeah, they are, but they're still big investments. I mean, probably bad news for anyone listening who's club side at the moment. And again, as I said, I'm not the decision maker now on sports partnerships in Just Eat, but I would be surprised if Just Eat did a big club deal. The main reason being actually is that Just Eat is increasingly trying to position itself as a global brand, as a brand that sort of translates across markets. And so I think from a club perspective, clearly there are only a handful of clubs that would then be relevant in multi-markets. That'd be one thing. The other thing with clubs as well is, and I saw this many moons ago when I was at Satanta, is actually the club rivalry piece. And if you take on and work with one club, you obviously end up alienating the rival club's fans. And if it's a big club, that can be a big headache for you. I think what's more sort of likely, particularly when talking about incremental audiences and also being able to sort of tap into that sort of broader canvas of rights is around tapping into sort of rights holders, leagues, bodies, associations, platforms. That's really, really valuable. And I think, again, the decision-making process would not be dissimilar to the X Factor, but it would also be taken in the context of all the other marketing and the channel mix that is being used. But crucially, it does come down, in terms of value, it comes down to the ability to build that awareness, but also to activate your brand. I don't think it's enough anymore, frankly, just to have your, and I'm not talking about from Just Eat perspective, I'm talking as a marketeer, just to have your brand plastered all over training grounds or training kits or emails or display banner ads or program ads. I think it's about the activation and how you tap into that content. And also it's about aligning with a brand's purpose as well. And it's about how do you then take that into the community and beyond just that core brand awareness piece. And that's where the value really comes into it in terms of activating to drive those incremental audiences.
And I mean, you talked about the sort of global shift. So, and I know that you're not involved with the takeaway.com, but they have done a deal with UEFA, is that right?
They have, yeah.
So that's the same principles, but laid over a bigger, so there's a sort of global local thing going on.
Yeah. As I said earlier on, so Just Eat merged with takeaway.com back sort of very, very start of this year. It seems a long time ago now. And that deal, the UEFA deal, had been done by takeaway.com. obviously prior to that, because the Euro should have been obviously last summer, the summer just gone. But because the company is now one company, the Just Eat brand will feature in that partnership next year. So it is a partnership that the Just Eat brand will also benefit from. But absolutely to your point, it is all about a global partnership and about sharing one brand across many markets.
And in terms of just the category itself, how do you define it, first of all? Because I've seen it defined by bigger and more ambitious ways, but it's not just delivery, is it? Or is it?
I mean, we're quite single-minded in how we think of who our direct competition is. And particularly because obviously we work with a lot of the other food restaurant brands. So I think it's pretty clear that ultimately you could say that anyone who gives someone the opportunity to order or eat food is a competitor of ours, but that's far too broad. The category for us is around food delivery and sort of digital brands that are connecting customers with food delivery.
So you're in a obvious competition set with Uber Eats and Deliveroo. What are the are you all the same? Is there any differentiation between you other than a sort of marketing tone of voice?
I mean, clearly we're not all the same. No marketeer is ever going to say that. At the end of the day, the two businesses you've mentioned are very logistics focused. Their whole sort of modus operandi when they first launched was to really bring those restaurant brands online and to do that sort of by powering food delivery. Just Eat's roots are in connecting customers with restaurants where restaurants do their own deliveries. And still in the UK, over 85-90% of our orders would be restaurants fulfilling their own deliveries. Now, yes, we have launched our own delivery business, and as I talked about, are now delivering for all of the biggest restaurant brands in the UK and the world. But the majority of our business is still connecting customers with their favourite independent restaurants. And we are very much a community-focused brand, and we certainly do not want to be seen as some sort of global monolith.
Which is the challenge in the global local thing, I guess, is it?
It is. It is a challenge, exactly. It's an obvious tension. And I think that's why when you look at, you've got something like a UEFA partnership, which is obviously a much more global or European partnership. But then you've also got, as you've talked about, the BT Broadcast partnership, or historically the PDC activity that the UK business has been doing to really activate on a UK level. And I think you will definitely continue to see that within the group, where the markets themselves will continue to do their own sort of sports sponsorship partnerships, albeit they will always tie back to a global brand platform, which is this platform around joy.
When you step back and your broader sort of marketing what are the limitations of sport as a platform or sports sponsorship when it comes to your business?
Well, if you take football, for example, and you take the Premier League and a Premier League club, obviously the sort of higher up the ladder you get in terms of the rights that you are sponsoring, the access becomes more and more difficult, and the ability to activate becomes restricted. And I think even when we sponsored, go out of sport for a minute and talk about a property like X Factor, we still had a lot of access. We worked very closely with ITV and with Fremantle to really tap into the talent, into the judges, etc. And we were able to bring our customers along that journey and make them feel part of it. Whereas when I think historically some of the conversations I've had with Premier League clubs around partnerships, the access has been fairly limited and fairly restricted. And I think that's a problem. I think, yes, you get that brand awareness. Yes, you tap into that big audience. But how do you convert that audience? And frankly, just having your brand on a shirt does not drive orders. If you're a brand that's already well known, it does not drive orders. So ultimately, any sponsorship that we do needs to have some sort of commercial return. And when we look at effectiveness of sponsorship, obviously we look around brand metrics and how it has worked in terms of building our brand and sort of changing brand perception. but we also look at ultimately, has it shifted the dial in terms of performance?
And if you, there's two questions there. One is it sort of opens up that tension between awareness, big properties, and access is one that you hear quite a bit. And the other, so the question there is, could you get an equal return from a less famous and therefore less expensive area? So, for example, women's football, is that a category that you sort of think, well, actually, we could do the same thing here or something similar with at a far lower price point? Is that a part of the conversation?
Yeah. So, look, full disclosure, I'm on the board of Women in Football, and I was in fact the first male member of the board, and our mission is to make a level playing field across football for women, whether they're playing in it or working in it, right from the pitch to the boardroom. I think women's football is having a real moment and is a real crossroads at the moment. And I think it's fantastic that you're starting to see Premier League clubs actually now include their women's team as part of their overall club proposition in their marketing, to their fan bases, through their social channels and with their sponsors. And I think what women's football does is it gives you a fantastic community-focused platform and fantastic access to a group of players who are starting to become household names. If you look at what's happening with the WSL and you look at the influx of players, particularly from America over the last couple of weeks ahead of the start of the season, that's incredibly exciting. And I think brands have got a massive opportunity with it. But I think when I then put my sort of commercial hat on, the challenge you've got with women's football at the moment is the audiences are not there. You're getting 3,000-4,000 sort of, apart from obviously the one-offs like the North London Derby last year where there was about 35,000 and obviously the Lionesses game where there was about 50,000. But in a WSL game, you're getting no more than 3,000 to 4,000 fans. It's a really interesting mix, actually, and it's certainly not the stereotypical mix that people think of women's football. But it's got to grow, and it's got to grow through TV. It's got to grow through through those sort of the emergence of stars, and it's got to grow through the community. When I look at brands that sort of get in early and really thrive, if you look at what Vitality have done with netball, I think that's fascinating, and I think there's a great lesson to be learned about brands going early into sort of emerging areas of sport or emerging sports, and I think women's football, we are starting to see that. The challenge with Just Eat is that women's football wouldn't be the answer per se. And again, full disclosure, Just Eat, I don't have any say over Just Eat getting involved in women's football. But I think it can be part of the mix. And I think speaking as a marketeer and not as a Just Eat employee, I think brands should be looking very seriously at platforms like women's football, and they should be thinking of what Vitality have done, where literally Vitality really own netball at the moment. And I know netball has got its own challenges now with COVID and the rule of six, but Vitality have done an amazing job at really taking netball to the masses, and obviously that's been matched with the end product where obviously the England team have been incredibly successful. So I do think brands should be braver. And I do think platforms such as women's football can start to address that access piece. But unfortunately, until sort of the eyeballs grow, it won't address the audience piece.
Is it just flip that into your customers. Is there a gender split in terms of Just Eat customers, or it just gives a bit?
Slightly skewed more towards women, but not massively. Just Eat is a
so women order more food from Just Eat than men.
Let's not say fast food, Richard. We are a balanced, healthy diet. No, what we find is that women. Sorry. Just to go back to who the customer is, the customer tends to be sort of young couples or families or people who are living on their own in towns and in suburbs, and so if you think of that sort of that demographic, then women also tend to be more often the decision maker around sort of whether we're having a takeaway tonight or not. That is the typical Just Eat audience. What I should say, however, though, is Just Eat is very much the sort of the omnibus brand, if you like, because as we've grown and we are the market leader in the UK and certainly outside of London, we enjoy a market share of in excess of 60%. We really have a very, very broad demographic of customers. And actually through by now sort of going through this change and bringing on a lot of these sort of famous restaurant brands, we are also seeing a lot younger customers and a lot more sort of city centre customers coming on board as well. But slightly skewed towards women, yeah.
And is the market, you know, I hear you on the sort of, there's the global takeaway thing, mm-hmm. takeaway.com, and then you've got the global brand. You could sort to see, actually, if you're looking at this market, then niche delivery might be a future. Is that part of the what you're looking at in terms of when you look at your own marketplace? And by that, I mean, you know, focus particularly either geographically or by gender or by whatever market category, you know, whatever distinction we make.
Yeah, I think if you take it out of food delivery for a minute and you just think about marketplace businesses and you look at other sectors and you take financial services, for example, and you look at the aggregator sector there, it's about scale, and it's about scale of brand and scale of technology and scale of supply. So look, we see players come and go regionally all the time. We see specialist players come and go, particularly around sort of certain cuisine types. But ultimately, we've been around for, as I said, 15 years in the UK and longer abroad. And our group strategy is very clear that we will invest in making sure that we maintain that market leadership and maintain that share of mind. There are areas of interest always, but it's really about focusing on what we're good at, and that's about driving eyeballs to restaurants rather than getting distracted about sort of new market entrants or sort of niche specialisms.
Mm. Okay, there's an esports question coming up, so prepare yourself. Is that the same dynamic at play? And am I, you know, my all of my preconceptions would be, oh, we need to go to meet this younger audience, and esports would be the route.
Yeah, esports is a fascinating one because I think it's still so misunderstood. I think it's still quite hard to navigate in terms of team, individual, franchise, agent. And I don't think many brands, clearly, again, there's some brands who have got in early, but I don't think many brands fully understand it. We've experimented a bit, and we certainly see gaming more broadly, with esports, a category within that, as a real platform for future partnerships. But yeah, if you think of the synergies between sort of staying in, watching TV and ordering food, the gaming audience is huge. I ran our Australian business last year called Menulog, and one of the things we saw was a big sort of rise in overnight orders of people ordering from servos or petrol stations, as they're known in the UK. And they were ordering gaming snacks, and they were gamers. They were people who were gaming and then were ordering things like ice cream and cookies and sweets to sort of keep them going as they were playing games. So again, going back to that occasions piece and the incremental occasions, gaming is a real incrementality opportunity, and I think esports is definitely part of that. But I wouldn't profess to be an esports expert, and certainly it's an area that I think it still needs a lot more navigation, a lot more understanding on behalf of brands.
Well, listen, Ben, I really enjoyed that. Thank you very much for your time. Really interesting to sort of take us inside what is a really interesting category. So. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Richard. Great to speak to you.
Cheers.